Radha Madhava Kunja Virage Paravidakacharya, Ostatello, Satishi, Shimad, is Divine Grace, Savaya, Chalana, the Bhaktivedanta, Goswami, Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Iskan, Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Ananda Gopti, Vaishnava, Varinda, Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Hoyadas, Thakur, Kijai, Friends say, Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shitwaita Gadadha, Shivasini Gaur, Bhakta Vrindi Gajan, Shri Shri Radhakrishna, Gopagopata Sayam Kurun Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavan Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Chakadavasami Kijai, Vinamai Kijai, Shimani Gavasi Devi Gajai, Samveda Bhakta Vrindi Gajai, Gaur Prabhananda Hari Hari. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda.
Hey, hey,
okay. I'd like to welcome everybody who's joining us online. Ada, Rangadevi, Mayapur, Pradeep, Avikash, Gula, Anton, Leela Shakti, and a lot of people. Okay, so today we're going to talk about Brahmachari life, which is a good topic for the Ekadasi. Today is Nirjala Ekadasi. And what does that mean? The word, are you going to do it the whole day?
Yeah?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. Actually, you only have to follow Ekadasi between 8 to 80 years of age. Did you know that?
Yes.
So, are you old enough?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you're 9. So.
9, so they have to follow Ekadasi. Too bad. So, actually, as far as the Nirjala aspect, you know, what they call Bhima Nirjala Ekadasi, it's not actually a story that I've ever read in the Vedic literatures. It seems to be something that devotees talk about. But the Mahabharata doesn't mention it. And the Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't mention it. So it's something that really came up later. When Prabhupada was on the planet, he never talked about it. He just followed this Ekadasi as a regular Ekadasi. So, be that as it may, it's something that's become quite popular in ISKCON right now. Also, I don't suggest doing Nirjal if you're sweating or it's hot weather, because you can get kidney damage within about 12 hours. When you sweat and the body loses its moisture, its liquidity, because most of the body is liquid. Did you know that?
90%.
Yeah, not 90%, but a little less than that. 70%. Is liquid. So if you lose that, you can become dehydrated, you can die from dehydration, but even worse than that, worse than dying, is kidney failure. So you have to be very careful about this. So I don't suggest in climate like this, unless you're going to sit inside with air condition all the time, then you can do it. But then, the whole point of Ekadasi is to increase what? Increase what?
Austerity.
No.
Hearing and chanting.
Austerity doesn't make you Krishna conscious. Krishna says, he who tortures the body and the super soul dwelling within is known as a... What? Anyone know the verse? Demon. So don't be a demon. I mean, if you can do something, but we're not supposed to like austerity, we're supposed to like Krishna. The whole point is increase your hearing and chanting about Krishna. You can chant more rounds, if you can read more, if you can do less nonsense. That would be good. Maybe it's impossible, but actually, you'll increase your Krishna consciousness. For example, on Ekadasi, generally, you know, I try to chant 64 rounds a day, and I don't look at the news on Ekadasi. You know, we fast from CNN, and Fox News. That's a joke. So the whole idea is increase, because it's a positive experience. You increase your connection and attraction to Krishna. Austerity for austerity's sake does not make you Krishna conscious. What makes us Krishna conscious? You have Yai, Sankirtana, Prayar. Yajanti hi sumedasa, that by what? Doing sankirtan, preaching. And even Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes would give his disciples advice on Ekadasi so they would go out and preach. Because in Bengal, if you don't eat rice, it's like what? Anyone know? It's like dying. Because if you've ever been to Bengal, they eat rice 3 times a day. Why? That's their culture. They don't have rotis or anything like that originally in Bengal. So if you tell them no rice, they think, oh, it's like dying. I'm so weak. I can't do anything. I have to stay in bed all day long. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in order to get his disciples to preach, sometimes would give them rice on Ekadasi. Because there's a higher priority. You know, you have to understand priorities. You know what priority means?
What does it mean, 99?
Something that is more value than that.
Yes, it means things of more value and in relationship to things of less value. Like first thing, chanting Hare Krishna, that's the highest priority. And of course, following the four regulative principles. And other things come after that. So, anyway, so if you can make the whole world Krishna conscious on Ekadasi, you can eat anything. But if you're going to stay in bed all day long lamenting, counting off the minutes,
I can
break the fast. What is the useless thing, isn't it? You just become. You stay awake all night on the Ekadasi, and the next day is just sleeps the whole day. What is the use? The whole point is maximize your hearing, chanting, and service to Krishna. Otherwise, it becomes very ritualistic, and you think that austerities are the goal of life. Then you can be like our friend Raman. His austerity was cutting off his heads, right?
Yeah.
Could you do that?
I just have one.
You just have one. Sometimes it seems like you have a lot. But anyway, so... And what do they say that someone has a big head, you know? Anyway, so... So Ravana was cutting off his heads, or Hiranyakashipu was doing what austerity, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He was standing on what?
One foot.
Was
one
foot. By an antel. He was standing on a mountain.
Yeah, he was standing on his toes. And his whole flesh just became eaten away and, you know, whatever, disintegrated. And he was living within his bones. That's Hiranyakashipu. But he wasn't Krishna conscious. Until he got killed. So anyway, so let's read from the Srimad Bhagavatam about Brahmacharya life. This is called basic training in Krishna consciousness. So 11th canto, 17th chapter, text 37. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So I'll just read this text. Atantaram avekshan yatanyasita namaha gurave rakshinam dattva snayad gurvanumoditaha. A brahmachari who has completed his Vedic education and desires to enter household life should offer proper remuneration to the spiritual master, bathe, cut his hair, put on proper clothes, and so on. Then taking permission from the guru, he should go back to his home. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Okay.
This verse describes the process called samarvartana, or returning to one's home after finishing Vedic education in the ashram of the spiritual master. One who cannot concentrate all of his desires in the devotional service of the Lord is attracted to household life, and if this attraction is not regulated, one will fall down. Being covered by the ignorance of furtive activities and mental speculation, the living entity seeks enjoyment outside the devotional service of the Supreme Lord and becomes a non-devotee. One who takes to family life must rigidly follow the Vedic rules and regulations in order to avoid the collapse of his spiritual determination. One who enjoys intimate sense gratification with women must become duplicitous in his dealings with others and consequently falls down from the platform of simple, pure life. When the mind is disturbed by lust, one begins to resent the principle of submission to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotee, and the dark clouds of one's offensive mentality completely cover the light of spiritual knowledge. One should dovetail his propensity to love someone by serving the lotus feet of a pure devotee. As stated in Vedic literature, one who worships Govinda, Lord Krishna, but does not worship his devotees is not to be considered an advanced Vaishnava. Rather, he is to be considered a proud hypocrite. What's a hypocrite?
A person who claims to be someone
loving
something else.
Yes, who says one thing and does another thing. Like someone who says, instructs their children, don't smoke, and the person smokes. Right? That's a hypocrite. Anyway, Atantaram avekshan yata gigashitangama gurve lakshinam dhatva snayat gurvandu modintaha. So, omagana timdanda sha. Dhananjana shataya shapshura vidinam yinatasmai shingurvevaham. So, this sort of training is very, very important in Krishna consciousness. And this is mentioned, actually, elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanda Gurohitam Archiyanda Savadmancho, that a Brahmachari and a Brahmachari and everybody should be trained up to work. It says, first of all, the first part of the verse says, to live in the place of the spiritual master, like Gurukul. So one has to make his home like the place of the spiritual master. The home should not be seen simply as a place to have parties. The home should be seen as a place that is meant for the service of the spiritual master, Brahmachari Gurukule. Vasandanta Gaurohitam. He learns to control his senses, to work for the benefit of the spiritual master, Gaurohitam. Archiyandasavan. He learns good behavior, you know, Yadyada Charati Shreshtas. And then Dasavan, this is very important. He learns what? You know what Dasavan means?
Servitude.
Yeah, it means full of service. Just like we have the word Bhagavan, which means full of opulence. You know, Krishna's full of opulence. So Dasavan means full of service. So in other words, he imbibes the spirit that's his identity. You know, generally we think my identity is what? The body or things related to the body. Like my identity is I'm American or Indian or man or woman or an engineer that you want to be or a member of this family. But one's identity is Jivera Svarupohoi Nitya Krishnas, right? What does that mean?
Internal identity is
Krishna. It's Krishna's servant. Everything else is called an upadi. Upadi means a designation, just a label. Mm-hmm. You know, you put labels on people all the time. Like, you're a rascal. That's a label. You're talkative. That's a label. So, anyway, so beyond these upadi, sarvapadi vinirvuktam tatpada joina nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ujjate. That we're meant to be servants of Rishikesha, who's Krishna, the proprietor of the senses. So in order to learn that, one has to be disciplined by the spiritual master. That's essential. Because if you're not disciplined or guided by someone who is present on this earth planet, you're just going to think, I know what God wants me to do. Like, for example, I speak to many Christians, and they say, Jesus is in my heart. And he's telling me what to do. You ever hear that? And I say to him, is Jesus telling you to go to the bar? Yeah, because they go, they all go to the bar, drink, whatever. He's telling you, wow, pretty good Jesus, you know, he's telling you to go to the bar. He's telling you to eat meat. Wow. No, he's not, because people do not know what Krishna is saying unless they're absolutely pure devotees. The super soul is in our heart. Brahmayan Sabrabhutani. So Krishna is directing the wanderings of the living entities. Also 15th chapter, text 15 in the Gita, Matakswantir Gyanapovanamcha. That Krishna is giving us intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness. But we can't hear what he's saying because we are covered by our own selfish desires. Just like I'm sure you've experienced, I'm using Aniru as an example. It's more fun. That's sometimes his mother will give him instructions and he doesn't hear, right?
Always.
That's pretty good. Instead of sometimes, she will say, do this, do this, that. And she'll say, didn't you hear what I said? And he'll say, no, you didn't say it. I heard you say, enjoy. Sometimes he'll hear what he wants to hear, doesn't he? So that's us in the material world. we're hearing the super soul. He's saying, well, enjoy. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. I mean, we're hearing all these instructions from super soul. Not coming from super soul, they're coming from our own conditioning. So, therefore, in order to understand what Krishna wants, you have to have someone who's present in the earth planet. And that's the spiritual master who's the transmitter via media. And one has to somehow or other imbibe the discipline of Gurur Hitam. You're working for the benefit of the spiritual master, which is non-different than the benefit of Krishna because the spiritual master is transparent. Okay. And so in the traditional system, this would be done at the ashram of the spiritual master. And there's interesting stories that illustrate this. These stories are from the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, as you like stories, there was a brahmachari in the ashram of a spiritual master. And this brahmachari, he couldn't control his senses very well. So he was, to use a politically correct term, he was horizontally challenged. The adults can translate that for you. Yeah, we don't want to say anything uncool about fat. You know, horizontally challenged. You know, vertically challenged means you're very tall. But nowadays, actually, you have to use politically correct language. Like if someone, you know, if someone has anger, you just say that they're challenged with something, you know, challenged with anger or something, like anger challenged. You don't say they're an angry person anymore. Or someone's stupid, you say they're mentally challenged. No, you can't say that. That's called fat shaming.
Yes.
That's an offense in America.
It's an offense. You can't do it. You can't do fat shaming. Of course, in India, if you're fat, you say, you're healthy. Isn't it?
Mota.
Yeah.
Mota.
Yeah, Mota. Motubai. One time I was giving an initiation in Fiji, and I didn't know what the word, you know, motubai or motama means. Anyway, so I was reading off the list of the initiates, and they said, okay, there's the next person to take initiation is motama. And which means fat mother. So, and all the brahmacharis were rolling and laughing. And I said, "What's the problem? What did I say?" So then I had to learn some Hindi so I didn't get in trouble anymore.
But in Gujarati, it means big brother.
Yeah, big brother. But in Hindi, it can mean someone is older. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, and also, yeah, Gujarati does mean big brother, because I experienced that. So you got to be careful what part of India you're in. So anyway, so there was this brahmachari who had trouble. And the guru wanted to discipline him, because an important part of spiritual discipline is learning how to control what, Aniruddha? Your tongue. Like we chant every morning, what? No, not that prayer. Dharma deji vayati lomamori sudurmati dekejitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakitakit right? And the tongue does two things that are hard to control. First, the eating, and what else?
Speaking.
The speaking. That's why we say vacha vegam, manasakura vegam, jiva vegam, mudra pesa, pasta vegam. What has to control tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words? So anyway, so this particular individual had to be trained up with the spiritual master. Not the spiritual master was cruel, but he was thinking of the benefit of the disciples. You know, sometimes people think, my guru is really cruel. He's making me do all these things. But actually, it's for the benefit of the disciple. So he tells his disciple, all right, I want you to be trained up. So he sends him out to the field to take care of the cows, because he thought in this way, you know, he'll be a little austere. He won't be sitting waiting for the next prasadam to come. You know, every time he hears the RT bell, the concha, wow, it's time for prasadam.
What a motivation.
I remember when I joined the movement, it was like that. Because we would take prasadam 3 or 4 times a day. And King Prabhupada said people join the movement because of prasadam. When you first join, you're supposed to eat to up to your neck. And we did that. We all did that. And after eating the Sunday feast.
We are stuck there, Maharaj.
What's that?
We are stuck at the prasadam.
I know. And then after eating the prasadam, we had to lie on our left side.
Oh,
because if you lie on the right side, the liver is there. So we were just like, oh, I overdosed on prasadam. So this particular individual, he had had enough of prasadam, and the guru wanted to train him up, so he sent him out to take care of the cows. He thought, you know, now he's going to become austere. But then this brahmachari came back after a few days, and he was getting fatter. And the guru said, what is happening with you? And the brahmachari said, yes, but I'm out there and I'm begging, dui madhukari. And everyone is giving me a pizza every house I go to. And a pizza, anyway, making that roti. And so the guru said, no, this is not proper. Because when you are begging, you have to give everything to your guru. And he said, yes, Guru Maharaj. So then the brahmachari went out for a few more days. And he came back and he got fatter. Or horizontal would challenge more. So he came back and he was bigger. And the guru said, what's happening? Are you offering everything to your guru and just giving it to your guru and not taking it for yourself? And he said, yes. I'm begging for my guru one time. Second time is for me. This is a story of the Mahabharata. I'm not making it up. So, and then the guru said, no, every time you beg has to be for me. You know, not that the guru was greedy, he just was training up the disciple. So the disciple says, all right, Guru Maharaj. So after a few days, he still keeps getting bigger. And the Guru Maharaj says, why? What are you doing? And he said, well, I'm giving you all everything that I beg. But I'm taking care of the cows, so I drink the milk, too. And then the spiritual master gets angry again. He said, no, the milk is meant for the calves. Don't do it. And so he goes out again. And he still comes back a little heavier. And the Guru Maharaj says, what are you doing now? He said, well, the calves, this guy is so, you can't control his senses for some reason. He said, well, the calves are drinking. You heard the story before or not?
Yeah, it's in the
Mahabharata. So so the calves are drinking, he's just like taking the foam that's coming out of the calves' mouths at the same time. And the guru says, no, the calves are just being merciful to you. So you should stop it. Don't eat without my permission. Okay, so then he goes out again. And this poor disciple, he is so hungry, like he's ready to eat anything at this point. Because his stomach is growling and just like... And finally he just like sees some leaves on a tree and he eats the leaves. And he gets blinded. And he falls into a ditch. And so the guru is really worried. What happened to my disciple? He hasn't come back. So he sends his other disciples out. And they see the disciple in the ditch. And the guru says to this disciple in the ditch that he doesn't take him out of the ditch, which is interesting. Because he's testing him. He says, you should pray to the Ashwini Kumaras. And they will restore your sight because you ate this poisonous leaf. And so therefore this disciple prays to the Ashwini Kumaras, the doctor demigods. And he prays and the Ashwini Kumaras come. And they say, here's some cake medicine. Eat it and your sight will be restored. By that time, the disciple realizes he's not supposed to eat anything without the Guru's permission. And so he says, I'm not going to eat it. I've got to get my Guru's permission. And that, he passes the test. And the Guru is pleased. He gets his sight back. And then the Guru says, now you can get married. Because he's training up the brahmacharis so that when they do enter household life, they will actually be able to control their senses. So that basic training is necessary. Just like in the army, you have basic obedience training, right, West Point. They put you through basic training, and they put you in the jungle, and you have to survive, and you have to salute your drill sergeant, and they yell at you. But this is to help you survive later on in the army. Mm-hmm. Because it forms a team spirit. And then the people in the team, they help each other if there are war or something like that. So in any case, so that this brahmachari was able to get married and have proper household life. And there's another story in the Mahabharata about that. That once upon a time, there was a brahmachari who needed training, and the guru sent him out to the field, again with the cows and the pasture and everything. He said, make sure that all the fields are irrigated properly. You know the story, don't you? You do?
Yeah.
He knows everything. So, and because there were irrigation ditches like there are in India. And somehow or other, there was a break in one irrigation ditch. And this disciple, in order to follow his guru's order, lay down in the ditch so the water flowed over him. That's real surrender, isn't it? The water flowed over him, and he followed the guru's instruction, pleased the guru, and the guru benedicted him and allowed him to go home and get married. So even even with Krishna, when he he went to the ashram, his spiritual master, what was his spiritual master's name, Ani Rudy? Starts with an S. What one? Say your sister knew. She knew before you.
Yeah.
She's more intelligent. So anyway, Sandipani Muni.
She's more intelligent.
Yeah, just, that's really, he's aggravating. I'm testing him. All right. So Krishna spent 64 days in his guru's ashram. And in those 64 days, he learned everything. Mm-hmm. He learned how to speak the language of the animals. He learned how to dance. He learned mehendi. Everything in 64 days. That was his whole schooling. Pretty good. And so then after that, just like being is described here, he asks his guru, what does he ask his guru? What do you want as dakshin? And what does his guru ask for?
His kid.
His kid back.
Yeah.
His kid had been taken. So he got his spiritual master's child back as dakshin. And so that was the relationship. So the point is that even Krishna's showing that example of surrender to the spiritual master. Even Lord Chaitanya showed that example. When Lord Chaitanya was talking to the Mayavadis, Prakashananda Saraswati, you know the story? In Benares. Lord Chaitanya was asked by this Mayavadi, why do you just chant Hare Krishna? Why don't you study Vedanta? And what did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? Yeah. He said, my spiritual master called me a fool. He said, you just chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not have that relation, type of relationship with the spiritual master, but he was illustrating the submission that one has. Because if one serves Krishna's representative, that pleases Krishna more than if you serve Krishna directly. You know, as it's stated in the Adi Purana, Krishna says, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. But one who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So that's the training that's mentioned here. And one should live his whole life, just like in my life, I'm living my whole life thinking about what would please Prabhupada. That's my whole life. If I make a decision in life, I think, what would Prabhupada say if he was here? And so I've internalized, even though Prabhupada is no longer physically here on this planet, I've internalized the relationship with Prabhupada. And therefore, as Prabhupada says in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the super soul becomes reached at that point. The super soul manifests himself. So that's really the point in Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's not blind following. Sometimes Prabhupada would test a devotee to see if a devotee was following blindly. One should follow the spiritual master with logic and reason and has the right to say, you know, why should I follow this instruction? Is right for an explanation. Prabhupada said, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. For example, Krishna, when he was instructing Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was Arjuna's spiritual master in one sense. He didn't specifically, let's say Krishna say to Arjuna that you have to follow my instructions or I'll kill you or I'll curse you. There's no verse like that. Krishna said, you've heard my instructions, and now do what you want. So the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna is a spiritual master, Arjuna is a disciple, was one of logic and reasoning, and Krishna took the whole Bhagavad Gita to explain things. He didn't just say in the beginning, Arjuna, you're a nonsense, slapped him in the face. Go and fight, you know. No, it was logic and reason. It wasn't blind following in the Gita. So that should be the relationship with Guru. So, any other questions or any questions? Questions? Yes.
Yes, Maharaj, I have a question. Arjuna was so related, so closely associated with the Supreme Personality of God.
Yes, his friends.
And then he had to spend, after leaving his body, he has to go to hell. What was, why?
It was described that all Kshatriyas have to see hell after leaving their body. The reason they have to see is because in the performance, it's a little more esoteric than that. In the performance of their duties, they're killing animals and doing all sorts. Even when they're practicing, it's described, even in the Ramayana, when Lord Ram was out in the Dandakaranya forest and different places, they were practicing shooting deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lord Ram shot an arrow with that golden deer. At that point, of course, he's God, he knew. But still, he was showing that a Kshatriya practices, and so there has to be some sort of reaction to that. Of course, Lord Ram had no reaction because he's God. But that's one point. Another point is that Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's showing us, by his example, Kshatriya, Kshatriya's duties, and a Kshatriya's reaction. But they don't really, they may have to see hell, but they don't stay in hell. Anyway, that's explaining the Mahabharata. So don't go to hell. Don't be a Kshatriya. You know, Kshatriya, sometimes they're eating meat. You know, like Bhim saying, he wasn't a vegetarian. Did you know that?
He was not.
Bhim Singh was not a vegetarian, for sure. You know, he even married Rakshasini. So anyway.
They're not vegetarian.
What? Bhim Singh wasn't. The other Pandavas were. Yudhisthira was certainly a vegetarian.
So it was in Mahabharata?
Mm-hmm. Bhim Singh was not in the full Mahabharata. Not the abridged versions.
So they have to eat, Maharaj, and to keep their bodily functions?
No.
For that,
no, they didn't have to eat to keep their bodily functions, but they ate because they were hunting. Okay. And, that was natural. The Kshatriyas had to go and practice their martial arts somehow. And they were hunted.
Because people in India, they don't go for hunting nowadays, and they still call themselves Kshatriya.
They still eat meat.
They still eat meat, so...
That's ridiculous. Actually, meeting is not necessary. Some of the best athletes in the world are vegetarians. You can read about that. Some of the big football players and everything like that, they're vegetarians.
Bill Clinton is a vegetarian now.
Yeah. Well, he's not a football player.
But Kshatriyas were...
They were allowed to eat meat. But they had to do it hunting.
They were hunting for practice. Like
hunting for practice, and they ate what they hunted, which was generally deer.
Oh, the kings also?
The kings would always go out. Because the whole idea is, when one was a king, a Veda king, is they would lead their army. Not like nowadays, you've got the presidents or kings or prime ministers or whatever. They just sit in a bomb shelter or, under the earth, while they're having their army kill everybody else. But the king, or the, whatever, would be at the forefront of the army. Therefore, the king was more reluctant to declare war. I mean, like you have Alexander the Great. You've heard of Alexander the Great? He was there with the soldiers the whole time. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the best fighter. It's interesting about Alexander the Great that his whole kingdom sort of like fell apart after he got married. Because if you read the history, he got interested in the girl. And the soldier's thinking, when I'm with Alexander? I haven't seen him for a few months. So, anyway. So that that's a Kshatriya's duty. But it's not your duty. And that's a different age, too. You're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to have that sort of Kshatriya. And a Kshatriya would never eat meat coming from a slaughterhouse.
They would go hunting.
They would go hunting. That was allowed. But they still have to see hell.
So they have to offer the meat to go to Kali or something like that?
I don't know what they did. But somehow or other, it was authorized. No, they didn't offer meat to the goddess Kali. Actually, that's for Shaktas, who once a month can offer a goat to the goddess Kali. And they chant in the goat's ear, Mamsa Kadati, which means next life you get a chance to eat me. Mm-hmm. You will get to eat me. Once a month, they can do that. And that's kind of discouraging. When you say, next life, eat me. That's what Mamsa means. Okay, any other questions?
No, I think that there was also one more, like I heard, like, because Yudhishthira Maharaj spoke lie.
Oh, he yeah. also spoke.
Yeah, so that's why he there to go to hell.
Well, that was Yudhishthira, yeah.
Yeah, Yudhishthira. Yeah.
But he saw the other Pandavas there, too, or he heard the other Pandavas there.
No, and they all went to hell.
Yeah, he had a smell, bad smell, then he had the voices of...
Yeah, he heard the Pandavas there. But it's described in the full Mahabharata that all the Kshatriyas have to go and see hell. That's the description. He specifically went because he told a lie.
Aswatthama
is dead. But actually, he went because he didn't tell a lie. He didn't follow Krishna's instruction.
Oh,
because Krishna gave him an instruction.
And he modified it.
Yeah, because Krishna says, Aham Twam Sabapapaibyo Moksha Yashami Masacha. That if you do what I say, I will free you from all sin. Mm. So if Krishna says to lie, there's no sin in it. You know, Krishna says to kill, and he's not saying that, obviously he was. There's no sin. If one does it on their own behalf, then there's sin.
Correct.
So any other questions?
So how we hear Maharaj, how we can hear what Krishna really wants.
And that's why you need guru. That's exactly what I've been talking about.
But you're saying that now Prabhupada is not there, but you have internalized his teachings. So I've internalized.
When one becomes advanced to a certain extent in Krishna consciousness, one can internalize the spiritual master.
So then you can.
But also you have the association of other Vaishnavas too. It's not just the spiritual master.
Right.
It's all the other Vaishnavas, you know, Sangha.
But not the ordinary, what level of Vaishnava, you have to see who...
Yeah, you have to ascertain.
Not your own level, I mean...
Yeah, more advanced. Therefore, we have Bhuyamakyati Prichati. One has to reveal their mind and confidence. And take association with Vaishnavas. Like Prabhupada said, if we remain alone, we're like one stick that can easily be broken. And if we're with the devotees, then we can be corrected. I mean, let's say, take the example of Bharat Maharaj. He went to the forest, executed austerities, but he fell in love with a deer. Now, had there been any other Vaishnava around here, there, what would have happened?
They would have
said, you nonsense! Why are you kissing this deer? And he would have said, you are right, okay, Hare Krishna. And his whole problem would have been solved by having the association of Vaishnavas. Of course, there's also that other statement, Upadesha vimurkanam prakopaya nashantaya. What does that mean to him? No. That if you give a fool good instruction, they get angry. So sometimes, if you give someone good instruction, they just get angry at you. So you have to be careful. So anyway, someone who is sincere will accept the association of other Vaishnavas and the guidance from other Vaishnavas, Sangha. Even in Buddhism, that's one of Buddha's teachings. Sangha, Sharanam Gacha, or something like that. Sangham, Sharanam Gacha, that means take the Sangha, remain in the Sangha. So even Buddha taught about that. Well, you study Buddhism too, or?
No, but the three lines that they say, Sangham, Sharanam, Gacchami,
Sharanam,
Gacchami.
Yeah. Good. Prabhu,
add some.
You have a question? Hare Krishna.
All right, you had mentioned about, when you were talking about Bhishma Dev's story, yesterday, and the day before.
Yeah.
And his appearance was a result of his offense in the previous life as one of the Vasus.
Yeah, he was Jao, one of the Vasus, right.
And how do you understand Maharaj? He's a Mahajan, and he stealing is an immoral act, and it's a reflection of an impurity in normal sense. And how do you understand such an elevated Mahajan in his previous life could have an impurity?
That's an interesting question. By that association, if one is not careful, even one's a Mahajan, one can become influenced. And that's also mentioned by Srila Prabhupada after he appeared as Bhishma. Prabhupada said because he was eating food cooked in Duryodhana in his kitchen, his mind became wicked. And in the Mahabharata, the full of Mahabharata, it describes that one time Duryodhana became very depressed and was going to commit suicide because the Pandavas had rescued him from the Gandharvas. I don't know if you remember that story in the Mahabharata. So anyway, so Duryodhana became very depressed, and he went into meditation. He was fasting until he would die. And the other demons pulled him aside and said, "Don't worry, Duryodhana. We're going to be able to take over the consciousness of Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, and Kripacharya." So their whole consciousness became polluted by bad association. So that's how important good association is. And that's why Prabhupada emphasized that one should only eat food cooked by who? Rakshasas. Right, Rakshasas. Because whatever you eat, whoever cooks for you, the consciousness is imbued within that food. And that food becomes transformed to blood. And the blood is the carrier of consciousness. It's like getting a transfusion. Can you imagine if you got a transfusion from Rakshasa? Wouldn't that be interesting? Who gave me the blood? Ravan. Well, he's the same blood type as me. R1. Yeah, Rakshasa 1. Of course there's no blood type like that. But immediately you feel like eating meat or, you know, kidnapping ladies or something. So when you get transfusion, it's good to get a transfusion from a devotee. So when you eat food that has been prepared by someone with improper consciousness, it's like getting a transfusion. Same thing. And even there's been scientific evidence that the consciousness of someone who comes in contact with a material element, it changes the nature of that element. I mean, there was that study in Japan about water crystals, and which probably all of you know about. Someone was thinking hate, 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 and the water crystals formed in a certain way. Someone was thinking love, 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 and the water crystals look completely different, microscopically. So consciousness changes matter. And you can taste. I mean, I can taste the consciousness of someone who has cooked for me. That's why, you know who my favorite cook is? Who?
Yourself.
Me. Because I don't have to worry about the consciousness.
I have one question on consciousness.
Yeah.
When Nityakeshwari Mataji's mother was in the hospital.
Yeah.
So what happened is that her body was functioning normally. We were saying she was breathing. She had her chest going up and down.
Yeah, yeah, but the brain.
Yeah. So where is the consciousness? Is it in the brain or?
No, it's in the heart.
So where you?
The soul was there.
Still
the soul was there, but the soul was not able to communicate because the brain wasn't working.
Right.
I mean, for example, if your computer goes down, are you still there? Yeah, I hope so. You know, some people are not. You know, their mobile phone. Actually, there was a study with young people one time with mobile phones. They took them away. When they wanted to see what would happen if they took the mobile phones away for a few days. So after a few hours, the kids were actually having nervous breakdowns. You heard about this. So anyway, the brain is simply the mechanism, the brain and the body and the nervous system is everything, is the mechanism through which the soul communicates. Now, if the brain is dead, the soul can't communicate with you anymore. Unless you happen to be a psychic, and the soul can communicate with you. But otherwise, the soul can't communicate. So even brain dead, the soul is still there. And it's important at that point not to keep the person alive artificially. Because the soul is just like held up in like a suspended state. So, I was asked the other day, is that mercy killing? Is that killing someone to take away the artificial life support? And I said, no. If artificially someone's being kept alive and you take that away, then let them pass away in a natural way. We had that circumstance in many cases recently. There was, of course, as Nitya Kishore knows, is Garga Muni. Garga Muni had this brain hemorrhage and a growth in his brain. And he was brain dead, and I told the devotees, you pull the life support off to allow him to go on. And the devotees were chanting. And it's interesting enough that when they took away the life support at the hospital, and they drove him to the hospital, he was breathing on his own until he got to the temple. And as soon as he got to the temple, it was just
stopped.
Left his body.
Even with Vrishabhattaji Maharaj, when they removed the...
Yeah, they breathed for some time.
It took a long time. He had to come and he said, she passed away now. So there was that time frame where...
There's a time frame because automatically the body breathes. Even if the nervous system isn't functioning, the brain isn't there, then the body continues with those activities for some time. So, but anyway, when the heart stops, then the soul leaves the body, because the soul is within the heart. It's not when the brain is dead, the soul is not there.
So in the physical heart, the soul resides in the physical
heart. Yeah, that's... Not precisely in it, it manifests its presence within the heart. Soul is not material. So it can't reside. Like if you do a heart surgery, you don't see a little tiny soul. You don't see Krishna with four arms inside the heart. swimming around. You know. But it's manifests as presence. The soul is always transcendental. But the soul is not allowed to proceed to its next destination until the heart stops. And when the heart stops, then... Unless one's a yogi... If one's a yogi, one can actually leave the body before the heart stops and then go somewhere else and then come back. Isn't that nice? You can leave your body, go out somewhere on your vacation, go to Govardhan and come back in the morning.
Yeah, there was one I don't know, some say there is an incarnation or something. Kabir Das used to leave the body and enter different bodies.
Yeah, also Shankaracharya did that. In order to experience something, he was having an argument. But anyway, in order to experience something, he did the same thing. So yogis can do that. They can, it's called astral traveling. One can travel with a subtle body and then enter it into another body. Or go somewhere and look at what's happening. I mean, even there's things called NDE, near-death experiences, where someone is in the operating table and the soul and the subtle body leave the body and the person is watching themselves being operated on. And they tell the doctors later on that this is what was happening. And they saw from the angle that they could have not possibly seen from had they been down in the bodies. I mean, I remember... I was having an operation recently, but I didn't leave my body. That was under anesthesia, but the anesthesia didn't work so well, so I heard everything the doctors were talking about. And they were talking about cats.
What?
Cats. C-A-T-S. And I was ready to just like scream out of it. You operate on me. Be serious. What the hell are you talking about cats in the middle of my operation? Because they, you know, the doctor was saying, not like this type of cat. And the nurse was saying, not like this type of cat. And I said, what? Concentrate on what you're doing here. So that has nothing to do with a near-death experience or an OBE, out-of-body experience. Okay, I think we should end. It's time for prasadam, right? All glories, what? All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you all for joining us online here. We've got a lot of people this morning.